building a company from nothing is freaking hard. Us entrepreneurs are expected to deal with unimaginable challenges and somehow keep a cool head through it all. This is The Art of Entrepreneurship, and I'm your host, Jackie Hermes. I grew my company, Excelity, from 0 to 7 figures with no partners and no funding. The Art of Entrepreneurship is a show where we cut through the BS and dig into what it actually takes to start and grow a company. If you give me your time, I promise it won't be wasted. Now let's get to work. Hello and welcome back to The Art of Entrepreneurship. Today's guest is Kisan Patel, who is the founder and CEO of DealRoom, which is an M&A lifecycle management platform that is designed for buyer-led M&A. Kisan is a really interesting guest, and he had a lot of insight on topics that I don't think we've exactly covered on this podcast before. We talked a little bit about when you should start exit planning. I think this is something a lot of founders don't think about until they really want to sell. And a little hint, or I guess spoiler alert for the episode, you should start exit planning a heck of a lot sooner than you think. So if you're not thinking about it, you should start now. And absolutely, you're in the right place listening to this episode. We talk a little bit about valuing your company and how to go about doing so, and cover a heck of a lot more topics. Kisan also hosts his own podcast, the M&A Science Podcast, which has over 2 million downloads. Crazy numbers, must mean it is pretty popular. So it's something that you should definitely go and check out. Thank you so much for being here, and welcome, Kisan. So today we're going to talk about how founders can prepare for acquisition and really why they should prepare. I think it's a great place to start. I think a lot of founders start a company and they're like, oh, I started a company, and they're not thinking about the end of the business, unless you're like, you know, you started a software company and your point is to exit. I think a lot start with the intent of running it longer term. And then at some point they come to that point where they're ready to not be running the company anymore. And they're like, what do I do now? When do you think a founder should start doing something like exit planning? I think is a good way to start.
I would say pretty early. And it's not so much of, I'm going to create this detailed plan on how we're going to exit. But you should start thinking about who's likely to acquire the business, because more often than not, companies get acquired over IPO, and it's still a successful event.
Yeah. Okay. Talk to me a little bit about doing so early and you don't need a detailed plan. Like, what does that mean? Tell me a little bit more.
So here's the worst case situation. Worst case situation, you either get an unsolicited offer that comes in and it's like, pretty good. What do we do? Oh, should we look for alternatives? Do we run a process? And, it, you know, it's sort of like quick decision-making, or do we turn it down and try to keep growing further? That's one scenario. Another scenario is you get in trouble and something's happening, market changed. You're getting some pressure externally to sell the business, and you got to make a quick decision to sell the business. Mm-hmm. You know, in any of those events, if you're not really prepared in terms of thinking who the potential buyers are, that puts you at a disadvantage. You know, when you're sort of short time constraint and you don't have those relationships. So what you want to do is start thinking early about who's going to be a likely acquirer for the business. And it's a good exercise to do, because a lot of it crosses over with who are good potential partners as well. And the reason you want to start mapping this out, you want to start building relationships with these people. So again, if there's overlap with partnerships, I mean, it's a good thing. You can start building a partnership and that could turn into an opportunity for the companies to come together. And two, there's like a lot of trust that you build when you do this. So that way, when you do come to that similar event, whether it's you get an unsolicited offer, well, hey, let me go tell my network of the folks that I know that, you know, have some alignment or interest in our business. And all of a sudden now you got competing offers without necessarily have to hire a bank to do that. You could hire a bank. In some cases, it makes sense to, but in some cases, it turns away some good buyers as well. They just don't like, I don't like bank processes because they always try to rush it and get it done so fast. Then you don't get to do the proper diligence. So it's the person that's got the big checkbook and super excited to do the deal that ends up winning. But, you know, instead of doing something like really well thought out and crafted for success, I think the other situation when it's more of a distress or sort of here's the situation when you need to sell, again, having those relationships gives you more options. It gives you, when you have that relationship, you can sort of think of a strategy or things that you talked about that you can start putting more options and maybe go in a different direction that could take you in a totally different place versus just a rapid sale.
Yeah, I've had a couple cl a client and a couple friends that have had to sell businesses when they're in distress, and those situations never seem to work out super well. Like one was in a legal situation and had to sell. One, just the business was not doing as well and was acquired by another business that offered a similar service. And it's like, I think it's really hard to kind of get what you think you deserve. And I think that what you think you deserve is often different than what other people think you deserve. How do you go about figuring out what a company is worth? And I assume, well, I know that that is based on what kind of business it is and all of that good stuff. So talk to us a little bit about that.
Talk to people, talk to other founders, especially the closer the space you are, the better. Get a sense from them. Talk to the potential investors because they always have some comps and data that they could share with you. And then bankers, whether you use them or not, but they always have tons of data. They're always in tune with the market, can help with certain introductions at points. I think you being in touch with that network helps you get a sense of what's happening and being aware of what things are selling and trading for. And just being realistic, because I do think that happens, like you described, Jackie, where you get very optimistic about the value of your business, and then there's a bit of a reality check. And the reality of it all is it depends on who the buyer is. There is no like fixed value on value. It's the value is dependent on how the buyer perceives the value. And you could have buyers out there that are just purely looking for a financial return. You could have opportunistic buyers that are just looking for really good deals, or you get some very interesting strategic buyers that may see how the technology could bridge a roadmap gap that they know would solve a big problem for them or help them get to market significantly faster and go after a really big market. So they sort of value it completely different than a typical financial buyer would.
Yeah, that makes sense. I was reading through your LinkedIn and your post said, "Don't assume that small deals are easier. Lack of M&A experience and unrealistic expectations can actually make small deals more challenging than big transactions." Is the unrealistic expectations piece what we're talking about here? Just unrealistic expectations around valuation?
I think that happens in just the process itself. If you've never gone through M&A, it's brutal. It is really taxing, especially when in the sell side, you don't open up and tell everybody in the team that, hey, we're going to sell. I'm going through this process. You tend to keep it pretty confidential. And it might be you and a few others that know about it. But then the acquirer is going to have quite a few people because they really want to make sure they're making sound investments. They want to make sure there's no surprises after they close the deal. So they're going to have quite a few people. Now, all of a sudden, you have this, many to few that are trying to do this transaction. So you have a lot of inbound requests for documentation, clarification questions that you're answering. And it is a very distracting process from running your business day to day.
Yeah, absolutely. I can imagine that it would be. Okay, I want to take a few steps back and just talk about some of the biggest mistakes that founders make when they are in this process of evaluating, I guess, whether it's time to sell. And we've gone through, it sounds like, a few of them, like taking those just the random emails. I get those all the time, like, hey, we're buying up agencies between X million and X million dollars. Are you interested in being part of this? And it's always like, am I interested? Well, no, not really, because I get 10 of these emails a day. But taking those deals and not shopping around, what are the other mistakes that people make during this process?
I definitely agree. Like dating, I think you should start having some of those conversations and get a sense because you'll see all types of different investors, acquirers, whether they're search funds, different size and scale of private equity and venture capital, and then strategics. So that one is getting to know that. So that way you get a sense of where would you like to see the company go if it turned into M&A, who would be a good home for the business. Sometimes you may even have conversations that help open up your vision of how you could reach your mission faster, that this company can help you reach this level of scale because of the resources they can provide. And that there might be a thing that actually makes it a net win to do a transaction. Other than that, it's really the process itself, which is preparation is the biggest thing. Just like prepping a house for sale, you want to make sure there's no mold growing, things like a leaky ceiling and stuff like that. You really want to fix all those things up. All your financials, really want to have them buttoned up. The more you can do this preparation, because people are going to look through all this, they're going to want to see when they go start going through your confirmatory diligence, the customer contracts, you have employment contracts, you know, these things are better. You have them organized and referenceable. It just, it makes it so much easier. The less you do, it just, skepticism builds up. It's like, wow, this information is not organized well. Like, what else is going on? It doesn't leave for a good impression, especially if you're dealing with a very professional acquirer, a seasoned acquirer. Like, they're immediately going to have this impression and how well you've set up your company, or organized the company for the sale process.
Yeah. I mean, that makes sense. And it kind of does speak to a level of organization or disorganization, right? If you don't have things like your employment contracts together. And to me, these are everyday best practices. And I know that it can get away from you when you're running a business and, you know, you don't have enough hands and all of that good stuff. So that makes sense. When we're talking about the mistakes that founders are making, how do you recommend that founders are going out and kind of building this network of people that they can have these conversations with? Because I suspect that a lot of people that are listening are like, yeah, I'd love to have some of these conversations, but like, where do I even start?
Corporate development in a lot of these bigger organizations, because that's always interesting, is the strategics. You know, if you can identify, start building the relationship and reaching out and just, hey, just want to introduce myself. You know, I know we're in adjacent spaces, just wanted to make the introduction. Usually they're pretty welcoming. That's kind of their job, is to have a pipeline of potential acquisitions. Same goes with some of the other private equity firms. If you can find ones that have invested in companies in a similar space, it's good to just make that introduction. Maybe it's tough to get the partner's time, but somebody in associate VP level, at the very least, like, start getting out there and networking. And then I think once you start getting going, it's easier to start getting intro. You meet some nice people and build a good relationship. It's like, hey, do you know so-and-so at this firm? Because the private equity folks tend to know each other. A lot of the strategics in the same space tend to know each other. So I do think there's being proactive in the networking part of it. One other key relationship when it comes to being really actionable to doing M&A is the attorneys. You know, I feel like a lot of times you have your general in-house counsel, but just knowing who is an attorney that you'd work with on actual M&A, that has M&A experience, that has ideally sold similar companies as yours. That's a key thing. I think that's like one of the most important thing. At the end of the day, like, a lot of this is legal work, as opposed to marketing the business for sale.
Right. That makes sense. Is there a certain scale that a business should be at to consider selling? Is there a certain like revenue, a certain shape that they should be in? Like, tell me a little bit about what are the indicators that a business should consider selling?
There's a lot of big variables into this, because it's like so much around the industry, the maturity. There could be a founder situation where they're burnt out, they got a new shiny thing they want to do, or they're just, you know, so there's sort of personal reasons which may trigger the sale. You may have some capital constraints. You raised too much capital and you didn't really deploy it to the investor's satisfaction. So, or it's just investors are eager to get their money out. They've been on the ride for a period of time, and they sort of have the ability to make that decision or influence a sale. Or there's just seems to be certain light and conditions that there's a nice narrative on why this would be such a good strategic fit for this company. And it may just be a good, strong business case for them to pay a compelling valuation that would be a good win for everybody. So there's like a multitude of factors. And then sometimes you get unsolicited offers too. Or like I said, the relationship's important, because there's a point in time when a company just realizes, hey, this is something that would really help solve a big problem for a big company, and they're willing to pay a big check to do that. And it may not have been planned, but it's just one of those things, you get an offer that's too good to be true. That's why I think it's so important to really front load that effort in building those relationships ahead of time. One fact too, it takes, usually I've asked this, of how long the relationship has been developed before the M&A deal is actionable, about 1 year's average.
Really? Okay. And what's happening over that year usually? Is it building trust, getting to know each other, just like...
It's like dating, you know, close marriage. And so you want to build trust, you want to get to know the person, you want to get to know their business, you want to understand the company's culture, how do they work? Is it going to be a good fit? The worst on the buy side is buying a business that it wasn't what you expected. The team is too tough to deal with. They're not adaptable. They didn't really combine as well. So those are things that takes time to get to know them. And that's where I've seen a lot of companies, they like to partner first, and you see them where a lot of the deals they announce are actually folks in their partner ecosystem.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Before I founded my marketing agency, I worked in a private equity-backed software company where we made a lot of acquisitions. And then a lot of our clients are making acquisitions, integrating companies. And you see, times where it goes really well, and then you see times where it doesn't go as well, and the teams aren't as compatible. Sometimes the tech isn't as compatible. And I think there are a lot of variables that go into all of those deals and how well they go in the long term that you have to figure out during that, what you're calling dating period. So that makes a lot of sense. For the founders that are listening, I just have one more question. If they have gone through this process before, which I know a number of people that have gone through the process of thinking about selling, maybe even, evaluating a sale, and it hasn't worked out for them, what would you do next?
If the sale process failed and it didn't work out,
Yeah. Like, do you dig back in? Do you make your company more attractive? Like, do you go back to market?
they're both. It does. It is, and it wears and tears, and it's really puts you in a distraught situation to have a failed process.
Yeah.
It depends. Sometimes it fails early, but when it fails at the very end, it is tough, really tough, because you've invested so much time and energy. I definitely think regrouping, getting the business to go back to sort of business as usual as quick as you can is going to be important, because when you get distracted, sometimes it affects business performance. You really want to get that back and make sure it's up and up. And then I think that's where reflecting too, just what were the things that went wrong? What can you do better the next time around is going to be a key thing. And then I think there's a decision point of like, is there a sort of a timely thing where maybe that was an unsolicited offer? It was kind of one off, but we still got growth potential ahead, and this wasn't immediate factor for us. Or do we have a certain commitment to a timeline of getting this sold? Was it by the end of the year? Was it soon? Or was it already past due? Then we may be more actionable. We may even start looking at the investment banks to run an accelerated process. So that's a deal where like the relationships are nice ahead of time. It's a trade-off, right? If you can source your own deal, it's proprietary. It's a lot more thoughtful because you control the timelines. It's more balanced. You have your relationship, and they tend to have better outcomes overall. But bankers are good at aggressively creating a competitive process, which tends to drive a higher price. So higher price, but then the handoff doesn't get it tends to be as smooth. And sometimes, but they give you a lot of options. But on the other side, sometimes they turn away certain buyers that prefer not to be part of those kind of auction processes. So I think the timeliness is key to decide if you wanted to recruit a bank to run an accelerated auction process.
Any parting wisdom for anyone that's listening and thinking about a sale now or in the near future?
I think however you're involved, buy side or sell side, is really asking the tough questions. Like really don't hesitate, ask the tough questions. The worst I've seen is a founder sell their business and they get a nice check out of it. But then when they see what happens to their business, it's almost like this feeling of like a sinking, burning ship. That ends up being, more emotionally distressful than just getting the check. And I think if you were willing to receive the inquiries and answer a lot of tough questions, which buyers are going to do, but being a seller asking those tough questions, understand what exactly does their integration plan look like? What's going to happen to the team? How are they going to consolidate? Who's going to get let go? Are there going to be any kind of incentives or contingency plans for to recruit or retain some of the key hires? What are they going to get out of it? If you care about the people on your team, like ask questions around that. If you want to know, because a lot of times they're going to retain you for a couple of years or so afterwards, what is that role going to look like? Who are you going to report up to? What is that structure? Asking those kind of tough questions and don't hesitating to do that. And then it also gives you a good indicator too. If they are not willing to answer some of that or don't have any idea, maybe they're one of those buyers that aren't very sophisticated. And then I would also like ask if they've acquired other businesses, can you talk to the founders of those businesses to get a sense if they did a good job, were they easy to work with, or were there regrets from that founder? Or if maybe they're not willing to let you talk to that founder, question mark, why? That would be my parting advice. Ask the tough questions.
Yeah, absolutely. And if they're not willing to answer those questions, those sound like big old red flags to me. It sounds like transparency from all sides in this process is really key. And when the time comes, asking those tough questions and passing along information to your team, who I think a lot of founders care about a lot when they have built their companies and want a successful transition for everyone involved. So, yeah, being as transparent as possible, I think, is a great takeaway. Thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it. I think everyone will have learned a lot when they listen to this. And for everyone listening, if you learned something today or you know someone that is thinking about a sale or a future sale of their business, please pass this podcast along to them. And we'll talk to you next time. Thank you.